Global Labor Speakers series. I have been part of one of these in the past, and it's a wonderful initiative. And I'm very excited to be part of this panel today, and actually to hear from the other two speakers. I haven't heard Lynn speak for a while on this topic, so I'm interested to see what she's got to say in terms of some more recent developments. And I guess in particular, I'd like to thank Mark, because he's the one I've been most in contact about this for thinking of me and inviting me to be part of this. I should also make a note that I don't come from a social work background, although I should confess I did, for my first 3 years at Ryerson, teach a first-year cohort of social work students public policy. I'm not sure if they were better off with that or worse off with that, although quite a few of them went on to be part of the nonprofit sector, and it's great to sort of see them out in the community and doing doing good work. But I guess the reason that I was invited is because I have studied and I have written a fair bit about the nonprofit sector over the last number of years. And I've also been part of a research project under the title of PEPSO. And PEPSO stands for Poverty and Employment Precarity in the Southern Ontario. And this was became a SHRC-funded research project. And as part of that SHRC, I was involved in the large survey that we did. And I'm going to give you some quick updates of some of the findings from that. But also in terms, I was a co-lead with Donna Baines on one of the studies coming out of that grant that focused explicitly on the nonprofit sector. And you might know Donna's work, because she used to be at McMaster University, teaching in the Faculty of Social Work and Labor Studies. But now she's the a research chair in social policy at the University in Sydney. So a lot of my work is certainly informed by her and her past work and our collaboration. I should also note that I'm also currently collaborating with another scholar you might be aware of, and that's Mimi Abramovich, from who's a chair of social welfare policy at Hunter College, the School of Social Work in New York City. And we're looking kind of at a comparative human services workforce survey. They did one in New York City, and we're with some other nonprofit participants about to launch one in Toronto. And this includes looking at social workers who are working in the nonprofit field. So we don't, obviously, we haven't launched the survey yet. We don't have data from that, but I think that's going to be very promising in terms of revealing some of the conditions, especially in terms of the impact of new public management on the nonprofit sector. So I'm going to speak a little more generically to the issue of precarity and its impact on the nonprofit sector. So I'm going to start with some general comments, just kind of framing precarity to begin. In our research report out of the PEPSO study, one of the reports we produced with the United Way was the precarity penalty, which is this is the summary of the of that report. And in that report, we did a survey in 2014, and it revealed that about half of all of the workers between the ages of 25 and 65, so prime working group age, living in the Greater Toronto and Hamilton area, were in what we could call a standard employment relationship. And the standard employment relationship is defined as being permanent in your job, full-time in your job. It's expected to last at least 12 months and preferably into the future, and that you're paid some benefits as well as a wage. Now, the other half were employed in jobs that fell short of this standard. So just under 10% were in permanent part-time employment, but over 40% were working in employment that embodied at least some degree of precarity. And this represents a very dramatic decline in standard employment over the last 40 years, and a bulge in non-standard and precarious work forms. This change began in earnest in the last decades of the 20th century, and it's a trend that is certainly continuing. The Institute for Competitiveness and Prosperity in 2013 reported that low-income, precarious employment grew twice as fast as non-precarious, non-low-income employment in the first decade of the new century. And a 2014 report by the Toronto Region Board of Trade predicts that low-wage, less secure employment will continue to grow in the immediate future and beyond. Precarity, in short, has become the new standard. It's become the new norm. In the precarious penalty report, we found that men were marginally more likely than women to be in a standard employment relationship. And interestingly, that women were a little less likely than men to be in the most precarious employment forms. Despite these changes, women, of course, continued to be paid substantially less than men, and racialized women even less so. The precarity penalty found that racialized workers were significantly less likely to be in a standard employment relationship and significantly more likely to be in the most precarious forms of employment. While low income and precarious employment are related, one of the lessons of the PEPSO project is that poverty and precarity can interact in unexpected ways. Our research suggests that low-income and middle-income workers in precarious employment experience many of the same social issues, and that only the highest income earners are buffered from precarious employment's negative social effects. We learned that even for those not in poverty today, because they have jobs that pay reasonable wages, having uncertain future job prospects can lead to very negative social outcomes. And this is an important finding, as precarious employment is becoming the norm in sectors and amongst groups of workers that in the past would have expected to have secure permanent employment. So, more particularly, how does precarity affect the nonprofit sector? When we did our case, Don and I did our case study, we did a lot of interviews, well over 50 interviews, in-depth interviews, with a number of organizations in the greater Toronto area, nonprofit organizations. And I just want to read you a short little quote from one nonprofit agency senior manager. She noted, quote, "It's a precarious sector, and we're really in danger of becoming cheap government services with all the accountability of government and none of its infrastructure and stability," end of quote. The social and human services nonprofit sector has been particularly susceptible to precarious restructuring, and several dimensions of precarity are very highly visible in this sector. And I think that's one of the reasons that it's so interesting to look at precarity within the nonprofit field. The structures that produce precariousness in the nonprofit sector is primarily the nonprofit government funding and accountability regime, which binds nonprofit agencies to business models and work processes, and a very unstable short-term and competitive funding system. This creates not just organizational instability, but also undermines the quality of nonprofit employment. Consequently, the question of decent work for the sector is a major issue, and there's an agenda now that's very much promoted by the ONN, the Ontario Nonprofit Network. In addition, the work of the sector, which is directed at serving vulnerable communities, is threatened at two other levels. One is the preservation of programs in the face of government austerity. The second is the undermining of advocacy because of agency fears of criticism of government that may result in funding loss, a fear of biting the hand that feeds you, if you will. Thus, precariousness for nonprofit services and the sector as a whole also creates increased precarity for clients and for vulnerable communities. So precarity is about the lack of security. It's about the lack of predictability. It's about the lack of voice. And in the enhanced, and it's about the enhanced vulnerability that all of these things create. While the idea of precarity is generally applied to conditions of employment, it is also applicable to situations experienced by vulnerable populations, by institutions and organizations, and other social groupings. Though it pre-existed more recent government austerity, precarity has been intensified by neoliberal policies of constraint and by the rollback of the welfare state, attacks on social policy, contracting out, privatization, and such. Hence, in the nonprofit sector, precarity visibly exists at least at three levels. First, the nonprofit organization itself, so organizational precarity is produced. Secondly, within the nonprofit workforce, employment precarity, in other words. And third, within the lives of the clients and the community served by nonprofit agencies, so community and client precarity. The three levels of precarity are in fact mutually reinforcing, and they produce instability, marginalization, vulnerability, and temporariness. Given the short-term and uncertain funding upon which nonprofit organizations exist, the entire sector rests upon the foundation of perpetual temporariness, of perpetual uncertainty. The nonprofit sector, we should remember, fills two core functions. The first is that of service, and then the second of all that is voice, advocacy, and especially voice and advocacy for the most vulnerable. In filling their missions, they make significant contributions to social justice in society. But neoliberal restructuring of the nonprofit sector is working to strip the care out of work. There is a question of whether the market and neoliberal logic is in fact compatible with the logic of human service work. Neoliberalism's drive to reinvent government placed the alternative service delivery in the forefront. Many services previously provided directly by the state were contracted out, particularly to cheaper nonprofit providers. Nonprofit labor is cheaper because it is predominantly non-union. It's made up of significant numbers of non-standard female, often racialized workers, and the increased use of volunteers, including the voluntary labor of paid workers who feel they need to fill gaps and take on that extra burden in an unpaid way. This funding and accountability regime has placed many nonprofits in precarious financial circumstances and has worked to maximize government funder control, seriously compromising the operational autonomy of nonprofit service providers and their ability to offer secure employment. It has shifted accountability in the nonprofit side sector decidedly away from the client and the community to a one-dimensional accountability to government funders. It is clear that the business management system and the neoliberal funding and accountability regime has destabilized nonprofit service provision, which has created precarious delivery organizations dependent upon a precarious funding base. In essence, these processes embedded precarity into the very DNA of employment in the nonprofit sector. The sector is marked by wages and salaries below norms for comparable work in the public and the private sectors. Employment compensation has always been below that of other sectors, especially for managers and more professionally skilled workers. And while there is a lack of good historical data, there is a strong sense in the sector that under neoliberalism, that the compensation gap in the sector has been growing wider. This is especially noteworthy given that paid nonprofit employees have education and skill levels greater than the overall workforce. In a study that was done in Ontario, more than 90% of nonprofit service sector workers have at least some post-secondary education. Additionally, years of austerity-induced wage restraint has eroded through inflation already inadequate income and compensation packages. Benefits and pensions in the sector are also weak and below the norm. What is particularly challenging, however, is employment security. Because of the dependency on short-term, program-based competitive contracts for overall survival of nonprofit organizations, all employment becomes, in essence, temporary in the sector, dependent upon us securing the next contract. Even so-called permanent full-time workers, which constitute formally about half of this workforce, are in reality permanently temporary. Forced competition brought on by new public management has created a dynamic of a race to the bottom, resulting in deteriorating working conditions. And nonprofit workers are constantly under pressure to balance cost controls with needs of clients. The wage and compensation gap in the nonprofit sector is sometimes said to be justified by the psychic or non-monetary benefits offered by the work. The organization's mission often acts as a very powerful magnet, binding workers to precarious work and helping to normalize precarity in the sector more generally. Too often, the work of the sector has come to be viewed narrowly as being primarily a labor of love, which is seen to be a reward in and of itself. The nonprofit employment relationship is often in practice a psychological contract with ties of caring at its core. The highly gendered nature of nonprofit work also works to reinforce this labor of love mentality. The lens of decent work can enable the sector to address an inherent contradiction that exists within the nonprofit sector, where mission-based organizations focused on creating better lives and outcomes for clients and communities do not always provide the same conditions for their own workers, including social work professionals. The services provided by nonprofits are much more than just the service, as was noted by one of our interviewees. It's about a holistic approach to caring that engages with the community to assess and address needs and represents communities. Neoliberalism negates this holistic, value-added approach, leaving in its place a leaned-out model of service. Neoliberalism promotes a market-knows-best system of social allocation, with risks transferred onto vulnerable individuals, families, and communities. Service gaps are created by the lack of continuity and instability in delivery, with programs vulnerable to ongoing funding constraint. Cut to the bone, nonprofits find it increasingly challenging to maintain, let alone strengthen, community connections. Neoliberalism hollows out the welfare state, offering ever more precarious social supports in a time when there is growing need. A nonprofit agency manager aptly noted that advocacy is also good service because it helps to align community needs to public policy and programming. The lack of a meaningful voice is a key way that precarity comes to be created and reproduced. In the current funding, accountability, and competitive environment, there is a hesitancy to challenge government for fear that will that will negatively impact funding. Most nonprofits lack resources to engage in activities beyond core service provision and have little capacity to undertake advocacy. Consequently, nonprofit advocacy remains muted and muffled. Trust between service agencies and government funders can also be eroded here as a result of competitive contracting practices. As one agency official noted, quote, "There's also a fear of the competition, that we're all fighting for the same money. So you're trying to share a common voice, but then we are trying to steal our funding at the same, they steal their funding at the same time," end of quote. Competition and precarity are interrelated preconditions for the dispossession of the political and social value of advocacy. In this context, advocacy does not disappear, but it's transformed and it's pacified. Rather than redistributive advocacy, which seeks to transform conditions for vulnerable people, advocacy often takes the form of market-driven advocacy aimed at maintaining existing services and funding for the agency, but not really at broader change. So, in conclusion, I think it's revealing that the nonprofit sector has been identified in the literature as both a resilient sector and as a precarious sector. At one level, the sector has been very effective at adapting to the pressures of neoliberal restructuring and austerity. Its ability to do more with less is renowned. The sector has been under permanent austerity for many years, which has worked to normalize neoliberal-induced precarity. Bonds of trust between state funders and nonprofit service providers have been transformed into top-down contractual relationships ruled by market and business-driven models of efficiency and performance at a very high cost to those who work in the sector and those who are served by the sector. And I will stop there and turn it over to Lynn. Thank you.